A detective in charge of a juvenile crime unit wrote this. He said, "I just happened to be in the area patrolling in the detective car when the call from dispatch came across the police radio. Units were being sent to a dispute at the home of a family that I was familiar with. The mom and dad, both professionals and very loving parents, had one son, a boy who'd been getting into more and more trouble lately. I'd suggested to the parents that they should be tougher on their son, but they had fallen for the, quote, positive parenting advice of modern-day child-rearing experts. They'd not only refused to spank the boy when he was younger, they had eliminated any form of the punishment or chastisement from their discipline plan. Instead, the boy was allowed to do whatever he wanted to do. He was also provided with all of the luxuries that most children only dream of. I arrived at the home at the same time the cruisers were pulling up in front. It took a few minutes to determine what the problem was from the screaming teenager and the sobbing parents, but it finally became clear what was really taking place." Now, would you look with me at Proverbs chapter 10, verse 4. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 4, it says, "He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich." And then would you turn over to Proverbs chapter 22 and notice one other verse that some would consider the key verse in the entire Bible in relation to raising children. And that verse is Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. And it says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Say it with me, would you please? I don't have it on the screen, but Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." It actually happened about 20 years ago. A troubled mother came to talk to me one day. Her older teenage son was not doing well. He was regularly out late at night with an unsavory group of friends. He was drinking and smoking and listening to rock music. His shoulder-length hair caused him to look like a rebel. It really was just an indication that something was wrong inside his heart. She was having trouble getting him to come to church, though she had raised him to go to church regularly. In the middle of the conversation, she said to me, "Well, Pastor, I guess that one verse in the Bible just isn't true, is it?" And I obviously got a shocked expression on my face, and I said, "What verse are you talking about?" And she replied, "You know, that verse that says, 'Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it.'" She said, "I've trained Johnny up to go to church and to do right, but look at him now." And I said, "Ma'am, the Bible is true. You and I may not understand it, but the Bible is all true." I want to speak to you this morning on the subject, parenting with a diligent hand. And I want you to think about both of those verses, Proverbs chapter 10, verse 4, that says that he becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. And Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Now, the typical, time-worn, often taught interpretation of Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6 is this: take your children to church, teach them what is right and wrong, read the Bible and pray with them occasionally, and if they do stray away from God, you can rest easy because when they get older, they will eventually come back. Now, I wouldn't object to any godly mother or father claiming this verse in relation to a wayward son or daughter and praying that that child would return to God, but I really don't believe that is the main meaning of that verse. I also don't believe that my understanding of this verse years ago was really on target. My thinking most of the years my children were being raised, honestly, was this: if a father or mother will generally do what is biblically right in relation to a child, then that child will turn out right without ever going far astray. Now, understand me, no one dare ever take a verse of Scripture like this and become haughty and proud about raising children. None of us know it all. All of us make mistakes. I have failed as a father. I have failed as a grandfather. And if I live long enough, I'm sure I will fail again. Nevertheless, I believe there is a specific conditional truth in Proverbs 22:6, followed by a strong promise. So what does that verse mean? And what am I talking about when I talk about parenting with a diligent hand? I believe that this passage is telling us that we have to start early. Start early. Train up a child in the way he should go. And some people think that the actual training of children doesn't begin till they're 3 or 4 years of age. But I want to tell you, if you wait that long, you've waited far too long. Years too long. I remember a day when my nine-month-old grandson, he's 14 now, was reaching for a flower in my office. And his mother said, "No, son." He reached the little hand back again, and again she said, "No," and caught his attention with a little slap on the hand. And again, I don't know where he gets that stubborn nature from. I keep telling you, I think it must be the other grandpa. That's what it must be. And this time he looked over at me. Now, what do you think I said? Do you think I would say, "Mama, don't be mean to my grandson"? No, because she wasn't mean to my grandson. I said, "Son, your mother is right. You listen to your mother." Now, he was 9 months old, but I want to tell you, even that is not early enough. I believe a child is learning in their spirit from the time of conception. Another one of my grandsons was kicking his mother before he was born. Now, a little of that is nice and cute and special and wonderful, but this got to be too much. Her husband wisely placed his hand on top of her womb and said, "This is your dad. Stop kicking your mama." And he stopped. Babies have been born already addicted to drugs and alcohol and cigarettes. But I believe other babies have been born already addicted to television and dirty movies and rock music and country music and on you could go. And I believe other babies have been born. I've seen some. I'm telling you, it's a delight with a love for God and church and holiness already developing in them. Luke 1:15 says that John the Baptist shall be filled with the Holy Ghost even from his mother's womb. That phrase in the Bible, "train up a child in the way he should go." In the Hebrew, that phrase, "he should go," has to do with the mouth. One commentary I read said it was a picture of how a Jewish mother would take olive oil or crushed dates on her finger and rub the palate of a newborn baby to create in the infant a desire to nurse. And that is teaching us that a child raised properly is encouraged to develop an appetite and a desire for spiritual things. A child trained in the way he should go is not only drinking in his mother's milk, he's also drinking in his heavenly Father's love. One of the most foolish philosophies you will ever hear taught is the one that says, "I'm just going to wait and let my child choose for himself what he may want to believe about God in the Bible." Oh, no. You help him develop a desire for spiritual things early in life. You start early. And then secondly, what's the meaning of this? Training up a child in the way he should go. It means that you diligently work to teach a child until he establishes good habits of life. The human soul is designed by God so as to be able to set itself into patterns. Somebody defined character as doing right until it becomes a habit. And so parents are to work to help a child develop proper patterns of life in relation to all sorts of areas. Cleanliness. Did you know a child will stay dirty if you don't train him to stay clean? Honesty. Did you know a child will lie? You don't have to teach him to. A child will go on the wrong path by himself without anybody's help. Somebody has to train him to get on the right path. Amen. Honesty. Diligence. He'll be lazy if you let him. Sleeping and rising. Truthfulness. Orderliness. Attentiveness. Obedience. Submission. Bible reading and memorization. Perseverance. Prayer. Respectfulness. Faithfulness. On and on you can go. A child has to be taught almost everything and then checked up on until those good things become habits in his life. By the way, good habits are enjoyable after they are developed. It is not easy to develop them. It is not always enjoyable to develop them, but they're enjoyable after they are developed. Far more enjoyable than bad habits are. When a child clearly understands what you want them to do because you've taught them and yet deliberately defies you and disobeys, then you need to chastise them. And you don't threaten and wait and threaten and wait and threaten and wait till you're angry and frustrated and they're wondering when you're ever going to do anything. You lovingly spank the child. The word chastise gives it, and that is you be calm. There's no need to scream at a child. That doesn't accomplish anything. Have the time. Sometimes it takes time to properly deal with a child. Be alone. The purpose is not to embarrass the child. Have a little time of silence where you just look at the child and have them think about what they do. You talk with the child and explain to them. You instruct with your eyes. If you don't get the eyes of your child when you're instructing them, training them, correcting them, you probably will not accomplish anything. The Bible says that God guides us with His eye. You spank with a little thin rod. The biblical word is rod. It is not going to hurt the child. It is actually a milder form of punishment than standing in the corner or something like that. And then you express love and you pray with the child. Children know what you would like them to do, and they know what you will allow them to do. A man asked, how do you get a child to sit still? And the pastor said, how do you get the child to not play in the street? I simply insist, and I keep working till the child does sit still. Train up a child in the way he should go. It means start early. It means work to establish good habits of life. It means to determine the path for the child. You don't let the child determine the path for themselves. You determine the path for the child. An 18-year-old fellow who committed one of the most cold-blooded murders in the criminal history of Ohio paid with his life in the electric chair. Just before he was led to his death, he said, I never had any guidance. I'm sorry I killed that guy. I want his family to know that I'm sorry. And then he grew philosophical and said, the reason guys like me go wrong is because of the way they are brought up. I made myself. I went to the movies. I read dirty books. I didn't have any religion. I thought the only way to live was to outsmart the other fella. And the Bible says you've got to determine the path for the child because a child left to himself brings his mother to shame. Train up a child. The word train means dedicate, initiate, inaugurate. The parent dedicates the child to God not only by a prayer where they say, God, I want to dedicate my child to you. That's important. But by putting the child on the right path. Parents who simply try to restrain a child from doing wrong are not as likely to raise good, godly children. Godliness is primarily positive, not negative. Some people think there are many paths a child may take and be all right. But the Bible says, train up a child in the way he should go. And then the heart of the message really is my fourth point. I've said, you need to, what does it mean to train up this child diligently? It means to start early. It means to diligently work to teach till he establishes good habits of life. It means to determine the path for the child. And then it means to not let the child get off the right way for any reason whatsoever. To not let the child get off the right way for any reason. You see, the right way is a narrow way. And parents must always be alert and watchful, because well-meaning people, as well as Satan, are continually using pressure and deceit to get the child off the right way. You turn your back for a moment and your child will take himself or herself off the right way without you doing anything. It'll happen so fast it'll blow your mind. Or Satan will get them off. Or you will yield to pressure from family or friends or the child himself and let the child off the right way. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go doesn't require perfect parents. But it does require parents who refuse to let their children get off the right path for any reason. It requires diligence. Sometimes it is really hard work. It requires watchfulness. The parent must be like a guard who is always on duty. It requires perseverance. You cannot quit even when you feel like it. It requires a firm hand rather than a slack hand. Interesting verse here. Proverbs 10:4, he becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. And when it says a slack hand, it means idle, slack, or lax. There is a picture drawn in this verse of two kinds of workers, and every supervisor or worker here today will recognize the two kinds of workers. One barely grabs the shovel or the broom or the rake. Have you seen somebody do this? And they piddle with their work. If you're a worker and there's somebody working with you like that, it just irritates the fire out of you. You're having to dig and you got this shovel. I want to tell you, the only way you dig is with a firm, diligent hand. You grab that shovel, you put that shovel there, you push down on that shovel, you pull back on it. And did you ever see somebody with a slack hand? They set shovel there and they go like this, you know? And you want to say, man, jump on that shovel with all your weight if you need to, but don't stand there like that. You ever see a child with a slack hand who is sweeping the kitchen floor? And they're like, they got the broom in their hand and they're like this. You want to say, man, grab that broom. That broom will not bite you. Grab that broom. Sweep that floor. Get it done. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand. My daughter, I was sharing this with her yesterday, and she said, Dad, I said, do you remember this verse? She said, oh, do we remember that verse? She said, do you know how many times you walked into the kitchen and say, you're sweeping with a slack hand. You need a diligent hand. You can't get work done in life with a slack hand. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand. Now, who is going to wind up poor and who's going to most likely get rich? In fact, you know what's really interesting to me here? That word diligent, the Hebrew word for diligent, the hand of the diligent maketh rich. Six times that Hebrew word is translated gold. It's translated Proverbs 8:19. The fruit of wisdom is better than gold. The hand of the golden diligent maketh rich. Six times it's translated gold, five times it's translated diligent, and twice it is translated decision. Here is the hand of the decisive, the hand of the diligent, the golden hand that maketh rich. Now, apply those principles to parenting. And before I explain it, realize this, it is more important to apply those principles as a parent in the home than it is to apply them as a worker on the job. What is a slack hand that produces poor character in children? It is letting children get by with something when they should not get by. It is not having a firm grip on what is going on in your child's life. Our missionary, Brother Dave Head, is home from Romania for a few months here. His son David is here with him. And one of the things that we have done, come on over here, fellas. One of the things that we've done for the Headies for some time now is we will video our services. And we video the entire service and send it over to them in Romania. And that way they have not only their Romanian services in the church that's out from this church here over there in Romania, but they also have, as a family, they sit down and they watch the entire church service. Well, Dave's son David has been here for several months. His dad just got here. He's been at college, and then he came here for a period of time to work and plan to go back to college this fall. And David was, we have the birthdays on Sunday night, and one of his little sisters, how many is in the family? Six? Y'all got six. It was Katie, wasn't it? Katie had a birthday. Well, I knew that they were going to get the video over there, so we're stopping, and I'm talking to Katie-o, I'm talking to Katie looking straight at the video, and I said, David, come up here and tell the outstanding character qualities of your little sister. So he comes up behind the microphone, and he shares what are outstanding character qualities. Y'all are here Sunday night. You know what we do. And we all clapped. And then she would get that over there. Well, his dad just shared this with me a few days ago. 2 or 3 weeks after that video made its way to Romania, they're sitting there watching. And dad looks at it and says, that boy needs a haircut. Look at that. He calls his son. Now, honestly, I didn't notice it. And his son, it's one of those things, every guy, sometime or other, you know, he doesn't get a haircut as quick as he needs to. You know what I mean? I didn't notice it at all. But he said, yeah, Brother Davis, he said, I got on the phone right away and I said, boy, have you got your haircut yet? Now, wait a minute. This young man is a godly charactered young man. We just made him assistant youth pastor for several months here. And what are you, 21 now? You're the oldest in the family? Ashley's oldest, she's the oldest daughter, you're the oldest son. And yet, 21 years of age, did you get offended by that? He didn't get offended at all. You know why? Because dad has always done that. And dad's always had a good spirit about it. It's not something dad's being mean about. He loves his son. He loves him enough that he's going to talk to him about whatever. And it's not being a bossy, mean dad. It's grabbing hold of the parenting tools of life and not letting them go when there's still the opportunity. You can't have a slack hand in any area. Thanks, fellas. You can go down. Give them a hand. What are you saying? Thanks for letting me share that, all right? Now, let me illustrate what I'm talking about by the slack hand in parenting or the diligent hand in parenting. Here is the parent with a slack hand who has asked, Dad, can I spend the night at Johnny's house? That's a common question, isn't it? I remember I had four girls. I was asked, they didn't ask to spend the night at Johnny's house, but they asked to spend the night at, Cheryl's house or at, you know, different girls that were in the church, Mariah's house. Now, a dad with a slack hand might say, there I spend the night. Sure, I don't care. Or he might say, when are you leaving? When you be back home? Have a good time. Now, a diligent dad won't stop right there. There are several different approaches a diligent dad might take to this. All right? A diligent dad may have a rule. And if he does, every other family should respect that rule and not criticize it. He may have a rule that they just don't do that at all. That really is the safest thing of all. I didn't say it's what everybody should do. I said that's the safest thing. Different families have different rules. That's fine. Two of the most terrible experiences of my entire life happened to me in sleepovers when I was 12 and 14 years of age. The 12-year-old experience I have never shared with anyone but God, and I probably never will. The 14-year-old experience frightens me to this day when I think about it, because it could have sent me to prison. A group of my buddies were spending the night together in a little storage building in the backyard of their houses. I could take you to the house. I could show you this spot right now. One of my buddies and I got into an argument, and I reached the worst level of rage and anger that I think I have ever experienced in all these years of living. I was so mad, I really, truly wanted to kill him, and I think I would have had the other guys not pulled us apart and didn't let us get back together till we calmed down. Sleepovers are so potentially dangerous that our church's insurance company strongly encourages against youth activities that involve them. Now remember, here we're comparing the dad with the slack hand versus the one with the diligent, golden, decisive hand, and they may have different answers. And the diligent-handed dad might say, no, we just don't do that. But he might be asking, he may have a rule that they can go, but if they do so, there cannot be anyone of the opposite gender anywhere near their age there. Now, that's the rule that we had for our girls, and that our only wish is that we had developed that rule before any of them had ever been born. By the way, that rule is best, not just for sleepovers, but for them going to someone's house at any time without dad and mom going with them. And if the entire family visits another family, the diligent father will probably wisely look at his children and say, "Now, boys, you don't go in any girls' bedrooms here, and girls, you don't go in any boys' bedrooms here, and you don't close doors." Now, here is a diligent dad with a firm hand. Again, he is asked by his daughter, "Dad, can I spend the night at Sally's house?" And he starts lovingly asking questions. "When are y'all leaving? How'd you plan to get there? When will you be back home? What does your mom think about it? Have you asked her?" That's the question, incidentally, I always asked my girls when they came and asked me if they'd go to somebody's house. I always said, Gina said to me yesterday, she said, "Dad, we always knew to go ask mom first. Because we knew you were always going to ask, what does mom think about this? Because mama knows girls better than daddy does, and sometimes knows that girl that they're going to her house better than daddy does. I know guys better. She knows girls better. We better work as a team. You know that? The children need us both. What's your mom think about this? Who else is going to be there?" If my girls asked to go to somebody's house, they knew before they even asked if there were guys in that house, the guys had to go somewhere else. And we didn't make that happen. We just said, "You're just not going." And so they would say, "Can your brother go to somebody else's house for a night so that we can come over to your house?" You know, or they would work that out. It's just common knowledge. "Will any guys be there at all? Were there any problems the last time you went? What did y'all do the last time? What will you be doing this time?" Do you see the diligent hand versus the slack hand? By the way, what would you do if they started to watch a movie that you shouldn't watch? Do you know what to do? Let's go over that again. Here's a really big question for girls. What are you going to do if they start talking about boys? How many other girls going to be there? What are you going to do if they start talking about boys? That is so destructive when girls go to each other's house, spend the night, and sit there for hours talking about boys. What kinds of pictures? I just wondered. I've never been in her bedroom. What kind of pictures does she have on the walls of her bedroom? My girls told me about visiting one of the neighbor's children. I didn't even know this happened. See, sometimes it slips by you as diligent as you'd be. Sometimes we had told him. She said, one day I went to a friend's house and I was shocked. She said, I never went in again. I was shocked what I saw on her bedroom walls. I saw rock posters, the Kiss group on her wall. This was a little girl. She was probably 7 or 8 years old. And she said, on the ceiling in her room, she had this guy's that, you know, that one of these guys that girls just sort of dream after, that kind of foolishness, had it right on the ceiling where this girl would see it every night. Last thing she'd see before she went to sleep. What kind of picture she had. And then, will you honestly give me a full report of everything that went on while you were there when you get back home? That's the diligent hand. The golden hand of the diligent parent is far more likely to produce the riches of character, happy, obedient, respectful, godly children than the slack hand. The slack hand just doesn't get it done. Do you know how many parents lose their children? It's not because they give them permission to do wrong when they're asked to do something the parent obviously doesn't want them to do. It's because the child will do something and the parent finds out, but just lets it go. The child gets off the path, the parent finds out, and when the parent does not act, he does not have to speak, she does not have to speak. The very fact that they let it go is permission in itself, and it becomes a slack hand. And so the child is then left to himself. And remember, the shameful life of a child left to himself brings his mother to shame. A principle that ties in here is found in Hebrews chapter 2, verse 1. Therefore, we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. Anything can slip that is not given earnest heed, that is not given a diligent hand. Rebels in good churches don't become rebels all at once. The parents let an area slip a little, and then that area slips, and then another, and in a little while, then another area slips, and they're slipping away from the path. They're slipping out. This area slips. Then this one slips. Then this one slips. Then this one slips. And this one slips. Before you know it, you got a full-blown rebel on your hands who has totally left the happy, joyful path of serving the Lord and just doing right. The diligent parent cannot let disrespectfulness slip. The diligent parent cannot let bad friendship slip. The diligent parent cannot let laziness slip. The diligent parent cannot let standing around talking to a boy or standing around talking to a girl. The diligent parent cannot let that slip. The diligent parent cannot let stubbornness slip. The diligent parent cannot let disobedience slip. My point, remember, is this. Parents must not let their children off the right way for any reason. Several years ago, one of my girls wanted to go to a friend's house on Sunday afternoon. She asked her mom, and Ray Jean said, "What'd your dad say?" And she said, "Dad said it was fine." "Okay." Later, we were getting in the van and asked where the missing daughter was, and Ray Jean said, "She went to so-and-so's house." She said, "You gave her permission." And I looked and I said, "I did not give her permission. I told her her jobs had to be done first, and they are not done." Now, do you know what? It would have been much easier to have had a slack hand and just let her go. But it would not have been best for her. We did not drive home. We drove the opposite direction of home 12 miles, pulled in the driveway, and there she was. Talk about a shocked look on her face. We picked her up. We drove home, and to this day, you could talk to her. She very clearly remembers that Dad came after her. Why? She tried to sneak off the right path, and if she got by once, she might get by again. I read a story a mother wrote about how she used a diligent hand with her son. She said, when my son was a junior in high school, he stopped showing up for his first hour class. I decided to come to school. When I saw him in the lobby, I walked up to him, dismissed his friends, took him by the hand. His face turned beet red, and he asked what I was doing. And I replied, since you're acting like a five-year-old and cannot locate your classroom, I'm going to be a good mommy, hold your hand, and walk you to class. He was dumbfounded and embarrassed. I stayed in his classroom until the period was over. Can you imagine? Mama of a junior in high school, 17 years old, and she's standing in the back of his first class in public high school. When he came home, he asked how long I was going to do this. I told him every day till the end of the school year or until he could find his way to class on time. See that? Diligent mama. Child's in public school. But the mama will not, she will not have a slack hand. She says, today he is a loving and responsible husband and father. And she says, all I can hope is that his children are as mentally stimulating for him as he was for me. I'm thinking right now of several single parents that I have known over these years who have made it with their children. You know what I mean? Single parents are simply by virtue of the fact that they are alone. As a father or a mother, it becomes much more difficult to turn the child out right. And yet, I have seen several single parents who made it with their children, and their children all did well, loving, respectful, obedient. But it was because the parent had both a loving spirit and a diligent hand. Their children were far from perfect, but the parent stayed on top of everything happening in their lives of their children and refused to let anything slip by. Now listen to two really key thoughts right here. Would you please? These are tremendously important thoughts. Number one, we do not lose our children because of the strictness we should have loosened up. We lose our children because of the looseness we didn't make more strict. It's the opposite of what we think. We do not lose, secondly, we don't lose our children because of strict standards, but because we don't have their hearts closely enough to institute and keep the right standards. Probably the number one reason good godly parents lose their children is because the parents violate Ephesians 6:4, ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. And they get angry at the child, bring anger into the child, creates anger in the child. But then there's also this factor of the child himself. However much you love the child himself getting off the right path or the influences coming into the child's life that take them off the path. Now, what are some of these influences that get... The key point here is that you must not let a child get off the right path for any reason. You must do anything you have to with the golden, diligent hand to hold that child on the path if they start to get off for any reason. What are some of the things that cause the child to get off the right path? One, strangely enough, is love. This is a huge one. Well, I just love Johnny too much to discipline him. That's not really love. It's emotionalism. It is spoiling the child. Spoiled food stinks. So do spoiled children. I've also noticed that parents, listen to me carefully here, parents who spoil their children have trouble staying in a good church. The reason is they will defend their children even when the children are wrong. Your children need, listen to me, your children need to feel dad and mom's love and care and protection at all times. But it's dangerous for you to spoil a child to the point that they do not feel the consequences of their own wrong attitudes or actions. That is very dangerous. I'm thinking of a father who's sitting here right now. He'll remember this. I called him several months ago. I had heard something about his son. I didn't know whether it's true or not, frankly. I didn't believe it. He never called me back to this point. I still don't believe it. I don't think it happened. But I called him up because I'd heard that his son, something maybe the boy had done or said or something like that. And I said, you just need to know I heard this so you can check it out. That father didn't get upset for a second. I've dealt with fathers and mothers who would have really gotten upset with me for sharing something like that with them. He said, thank you, Pastor. I really, really appreciate this call, and you can be assured I will check it out. I said, now, number one, I don't believe it. Number two, if you need my help, you call me back. Number three, I'm done with this unless you call. You know, that's it. I'm talking about love and love, the emotionalism of just you to love your children too much to, you know, to upset them in any way. Several years ago, I was talking to a pastor. He told me what had happened the previous Saturday night. He said, Brother Davis, is a lady in my church, 33 years of age. She looks like she's 50. She has 6 children from ages 17 down to 7 months. I get that. She's 33. She has 6 children ages 17 down to 7 months. Said her husband beat her up on Friday night really bad. An alcoholic, he was drunk. She was at the emergency room for a while. The police came and he ran. She finally stayed at the pastor's home that night. It was Friday. And that wife told the pastor this. And he told me, and I wrote it down, my parents wanted me to love them, but they didn't love me enough to make me do right. Hear that? Real love makes a child do right. No matter what, it makes the child do right. It provides the diligent hand that says, you got to do this. I love you. You got to do this. As long as I love them, I could do anything I wanted to do. By age 16, I was pregnant and had to get married. The second thing that causes the child to get off the path of right is the parent's own personal weakness and failure. Well, you know, I drank or smoked or whatever, so I don't feel like I can tell my child not to. That is all the more reason to tell them no. Well, I've already married, divorced, and remarried, so I don't know how I can tell my children not to even like a girl or not to date. Listen to me. Try to not let your children know all the details of all your failures. And there are some things your children will probably be better off if they never find out about. But do not let your failures be an excuse for your children to do wrong. Let your failures be a reason for your children to do right. I'm not sure anyone can read the life of King David without wondering if his sin with Bathsheba did not cause him to be weak in dealing with his son Amnon. Amnon formed a wrong friendship with Jonadab. And then, following Jonadab's wicked counsel, Amnon attacked his own half-sister Tamar. Tamar's brother Absalom waited on David to act. But one of the greatest kings in the Bible, David, a king who had a firm, diligent, golden, decisive hand in leading and defending Israel, amazingly had a slack hand in dealing with his son. Many men will have a diligent, firm, decisive hand on the job, but will have lazy, slack, indecisive hands in their homes. And the home is a far more important area for a diligent hand than the business. When you see Absalom executing his brother Amnon, you're seeing the consequences of a father's slack hand. When later you see Absalom rebelling against his father, then 20,000 men dying in battle, then Absalom fleeing on his mule, his hair catching in an oak tree, and Joab executes Absalom, you're seeing the results of a father's slack hand. My first point on love ties in here with this point on a parent's own weakness and failure. Ask the question, did David love Absalom? And the answer is, like few fathers who have ever lived. Maybe as much as any other father who has ever lived. You remember that David took Joab and the other two commanders aside and said, deal gently with Absalom. Joab obviously ignored what David said. And you remember the cry of David when he heard of Absalom's death. Oh, my son Absalom! My son Absalom! Would God I had died for thee, O Absalom, my son, my son! He loved his son emotionally, very deeply, but he spoiled him. He wouldn't deal with him when he did wrong. David is now, watch this, David is now experiencing the domino effect and the destruction of the lives of his children. I've never seen anything like what I'm about to tell you here. I was astounded when I found this yesterday. Surely he will realize that he must become a father with a diligent hand instead of a slack hand, but it didn't happen. You might want to turn to 1 Kings chapter 1 and look at this as I read it to you. Verse 5 and 6 refers to David's relationship with Adonijah, his son who was Absalom's little brother. Here's what it says. Then Adonijah exalted himself, saying, I will be king. And he prepared him chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. I was astounded when I saw that in this context, because that is exactly what big brother Absalom did. In fact, it is almost, if you take that verse and turn back to 2 Samuel chapter 15, verse 1. It is almost exactly word for word what Absalom did and ultimately died for it. And now Adonijah, Absalom's little brother, is doing exactly the same thing. And Adonijah is still doing it. Why? Verse 6 tells us plainly, and his father had not displeased him at any time in saying, why hast thou done so? His father would not displease him. Do you know what? You cannot be a good parent without making your child unhappy sometime. They're going to be unhappy with you sometime. They are going to be displeased with you. David's father failed with Absalom. Absalom died. Adonijah is doing exactly the same thing. And the Bible tells us his father had never displeased him, saying, why hast thou done so? And then it says, look at it, and he was also a very goodly man. He was super handsome, poor guy. That was to his detriment. That was part of Absalom's problem too. He was just too good looking for his own good. And look at the last phrase, and his mother bare him after Absalom. Younger brother Adonijah has seen the destruction of older brother Absalom. The image of Absalom hanging by his hair from the oak tree with blood oozing from the arrow wounds in his body is clearly etched in Adonijah's mind. His older brother's body was taken down, thrown on the ground, and a pile of stones put on it. Absalom's pillar is still in Israel today, a pillar that he made. And I read a century ago in an old book that people would still walk by and throw stones at this pillar that Absalom put up 3,000 years earlier when they walked by. But get this. Oh, this is incredible truth. It is not primarily the consequences in the lives of older children that stops the domino effect on the younger children. Then is there no way to stop it? Is there no way to cut off a curse coming down like came from Absalom down at Adonijah? It is stopped when a father sits down with a child and says with love, care, and a firm, golden, diligent hand, what is going on here? Son, you have to see this, and we're going to help you, and we will do whatever we have to do to break this curse coming down to you. Here's the thought in a nutshell. Family curses can only be broken when a father develops a diligent hand. It cannot be done otherwise. The father must decide, no, son, you will not get by with this. It will not happen. and neither love for the child or a parent's own personal weakness and failure should stop a parent from diligently working to make sure that his child stays on the right path. Every parent here has one of two good reasons to make sure your children stay on the right path. Either you can look at your child and say, I did right, so you can too. Or you can say, I did wrong, and I know how bad it is, so I'm not going to let you. You've got one of two ways to go. Now, there's a third thing that tends to take people off the right path, and that is extended family members. A five-year-old boy was taking a reading readiness test. He used filthy language to his teacher right in the middle of it. And the person who told me the story told me that the boy had been around his grandfather who had a super filthy mouth. If you have good, godly grandparents who undergird what you're teaching instead of undermining what you're teaching, then thank God. And if you don't, be careful. I didn't say you or your child should ever disrespect grandparents, but let them see them with you if necessary. Many well-meaning grandparents have ruined children. A friend of mine who has a home for girls who have been in trouble and had difficulty has told me how he's had more problems from grandparents than any other area. I'm talking about extended family members. I'm thinking right now about a teenage girl who told her father, who asked her after the fact, after she got her life straightened out, how did you get hooked on rock music? And she said, I rode across town one time in the car with a cousin and he turned it on. That's it. Be careful about your daughter spending time at anybody's house where boys near her age are present. There's a fourth thing that tends to take young people and children off the right path, and that is friends. That is a big one. Biblically speaking, a friend is a shepherd who cares for you, guides you, and feeds you. And that is true whether your friend is a right friend or a wrong friend. A right friend will guide you the right way. A wrong friend will guide you the wrong way. The Bible is very clear in stating and illustrating the power of the destructiveness of wrong friends. Because of the need in the heart for a friend, parents will sometimes let their child have a friend even if he or she is a wrong friend. And I want to tell you, this area is so powerful that if you even think your child has a wrong friend, you'd be wise to have the golden, diligent hand that reaches out and pulls the child back on the right path, regardless whether they like what you are doing or not. One of the most foolish and destructive things any parent ever did was to let their child get off the right way in order to have a friend. Proverbs 13:20, he that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Proverbs 28:7, whoso keepeth the law is a wise son, but he that is a companion of riotous men shameth his father. Wrong friends, listen to me, wrong friends incite and build rebellion in each other. And two rebels sitting together form a virtually inconquerable army. Two rebels sitting together in a church service are virtually untouchable by either the Word of God or the power of God. I'm going to say it again. Two rebels sitting in church together are virtually untouchable by either the Word of God or the power of God. I actually was going to start this message by having everybody stand and all children and young people sit with their parents. Then I looked out and realized almost all children and young people are sitting with their parents. And those who aren't, it's not a problem. And look, listen to me. I said, two rebels in a church service, virtually untouchable. They're an unconquerable army. And the more they sit together, the stronger their rebellion will become. And in most churches you go to around the country, you see a row of them sitting on the back. And nothing touches them. And everybody wonders, why doesn't anything touch them? It's because the parents let them sit there. the slack hand came into effect. If your child has a wrong friend, then sadly, it may also be true that the child himself is a wrong friend. For Christian families, listen carefully, the main areas where their children are likely to form friendships, where are they? For Christian families, where do your children form friendships? Church, church services, church activities, school, the neighborhood, extracurricular activities they may be involved in, such as sports or hobbies or special classes. Now, some of those things I mentioned are really good things. But the more involved your children are, the more diligent your hand has to be to know what is going on in the lives of your children. And anytime you see your child forming a wrong friendship, you have to do anything you have to do to stop it. But it's hard. That's why you have to be diligent. But my hand is tired. That's why you have to be diligent. My child will be displeased and upset, and other people may get upset. That's why you have to be diligent. My wife and I were blessed with four daughters. They were and are the delight of our lives. And now their husbands and children are an equally great delight to us. But we learn that God made our girls with different strengths and weaknesses. And we had to study them to know what those strengths and weaknesses were. Frankly, there were times, even in this church where I am the pastor, where I could not let one of my girls out of my sight. They always had to be in my sight, and if they got out of my sight, I had to go looking for them. And other parents didn't understand that, and we were criticized for it, and I'm glad we did it. And my only regret is that at this point I didn't do it even more diligently than I did. This is also the reason why parents are invited and encouraged to come to all youth activities here so that they can always be right there. Parents, have a diligent hand that protects your children from wrong friendships at all times, in all places. And if your child has formed a friendship anywhere, and it is a wrong friendship, and you cannot be there with your child, you probably have to pull your child out of that until you can be with them so that you get them back on the right path. But you have to do anything you have to do to make sure your child doesn't let a friend pull them off the right path. A job may lead a child off the right way. A newsletter to fathers said this. It sounded like a wonderful idea. A student was offered a job in order to earn money to go on a missions trip. On the job, she met a young man 3 years younger than she. The young man began to win her heart, and by the time the father realized what was happening, the daughter decided to move out. In another family, a 15-year-old son started working at the corner grocery store. During the day, the store played rock music. At first, he tried not to listen, but it was the mind-banging variety. Soon, he found himself singing along with it. Meanwhile, the girl at the cash register, who was several years older, lured him to her apartment, and there he lost his purity. There is a sixth thing that causes young people to get off the right path, and that is just the world. The Bible warns, love not the world. But the problem is this, folks, it's easy to love the world. Their parents, who by seeking popularity for their children will let their children go off the right path. And that is just the world, and it's a love of the world. They want their children to be known among the in crowd, whoever that is. The world has a powerful attraction and is highly addictive and manifests itself. You especially see it on television, radio, music, magazines, the internet, and so on. You got to watch out for the world. And the seventh thing that tends to take children off the right path is the boyfriend-girlfriend game. I've given you several here. I'm saying you don't let the child get off the right path for love, for the parents' own weakness, for family, for friends, for job, for the world, or for the boyfriend-girlfriend game. I call it a game Because when youth not ready for marriage start playing with each other's emotions, it becomes a deadly, self-destructive, and family-destroying game that almost always takes them off the right path. In fact, I don't know, I've talked to several pastors in the last few months, and they say, Pastor Davis, you have got to keep preaching what you are preaching because you are right. There are more young people being destroyed by the boyfriend-girlfriend game in our churches than any other thing we know. Paul gave the principles for purity and happiness in 2 Corinthians 11:2 when he said, I've espoused you to one husband. A spouse means promise to marry by covenant, that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. And the meaning is a pure maiden saves her love for one man only. 20 years ago, we thought the boyfriend-girlfriend game was normal. It was destroying lives all around us, but we just thought it was part of our culture and didn't really know what else to do. I remember a godly father in our church who had a daughter who started liking a young man. The father watched it and didn't try to stop it. After all, it was normal. Then the father saw some character flaws in the young man's life. He became alarmed. His diligent hand went to work. He talked to his daughter. He pulled her away from that young man. He did anything he had to do. That daughter, that's been over 20 years ago, that daughter is now married, in church with her husband and children and faithfully serving God. The young man has been out of church for years. I think he's had 2 failed marriages. And I wish both had been saved, but at least the hand of a diligent father saved his daughter's life. And if I had time, I would tell you another story right here about how a father saved his daughter's life by going to drastic measures in order to pull her away from a young man. A father with a golden, loving, decisive hand. Someone has wisely said, it is better to build children than to repair men. But the building, I've been watching the building of a house going on for months. Can I tell you something? The building of a house requires a diligent hand. There are times when several men will be on one little spot and they will be doing everything they can. And if there was not a diligent hand, that area would not be properly built. It requires a man who will say, this has got to be this way. It cannot be another way. You buy a house where somebody with a slack hand built it, it won't be long. You'll find out you bought a house built by a slack hand. And the building of children requires a diligent hand. I've been reading and hearing the statistics about the number of young people. It's an alarming number who are leaving evangelical churches in America. That's churches, not necessarily like our church, but churches that at least preach the gospel and have people saved. 2 sources I read said, 2 different sources said, 90% of the young people that were in those churches, by the time they get in their mid-20s, are no longer in church. Only 10% remain. Now, we're not really evangelical, but a study done in the last few months showed that among independent Baptists, this is nationwide, 49% of young people in their mid-20s are no longer in church. 51% remain. I wondered about our church. I didn't do a scientific study. I wasn't sure how to do it. But I found a picture of a youth group from our church from 10 years ago. It's taken right back in that room back there. There was our whole youth group, about 30 young people. And I counted, and I figured, and I found out 75% of them are still in church. In fact, 20% of them are still in church here. I was amazed. Why is that? Because some wise parents are letting God work in their hearts, and they're parenting with love and gentleness and firmness and diligence. But we must not stop, folks. I'm not happy with 75%, neither should you be. The figure needs to be 100% are following God. That's what it needs to be. I began with a story of a detective in charge of a juvenile crime unit who was in the area when all the cruisers were called to the house and there was a major domestic dispute between father and mother and an only son. He said it took us a little while to figure out what was going on, but finally it got clear. Today was the teenager's 18th birthday. He had packed his belongings as was attempting to leave in the new car his parents had just purchased for him. Mom was desperately hanging on to the boy's arm, pleading with him to reconsider his move. Dad had pulled his car in the driveway behind the boy's vehicle and was trying to reason with his son about the dangers of being on his own. The officers tried to explain to the parents that since the boy was an adult, he could legally make his own decisions. If he wanted to leave, the parents could not stop him. Mom looked at the son with tears in her eyes and said, "Honey, we love you more than anything in the world." And the boy stared at his mother with a sneer on his face and said, "Shut up, you two make me sick to my stomach." "During my years," he continues, "with the police department's juvenile crime unit, I've tried to convince parents that a child who is disciplined for misbehavior realizes that the discipline is a result of love. It's not easy for parents to do. I've also tried to convince parents that if they allow their children to do anything they want, the child will grow up to hate them. I've met hundreds of children who have been showered with all the luxuries in life, a bedroom with an entertainment center and surround sound, all the clothes they wanted, meals on the table, absolutely no limits on their activities, yet these children absolutely hated their parents. For no apparent reason, these youngsters turn on mom and dad and treat them with disdain and contempt. There's only one thing that these children lack during their upbringing. That one missing element is swift, sure discipline when they violated the rules. I personally observed those children yell into the face of their parent, 'Oh yeah, what do you think you're going to do about it?' Refusing to discipline your children for defiant misbehavior will not make them love you anymore. In fact, it will make your children hate you." Proverbs 14:12 says, "There is a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death." You know, there are people who had listened to a message like this about staying on the right path, keeping your children there with that strong, diligent, golden hand, and they would say, "That's ridiculous. Children go this way, this way, this way. There's a way which seemeth right unto a man, the end thereof are the ways of death." That is true in family life. That's true, especially in salvation. There are folks who say, "Well, I'll be fine. I'll get to heaven. I'm doing good works. I go to church sometime. I've been baptized." There's a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. The only way you get to heaven is through the Lord Jesus Christ. Would you bow with me, please?